And I'm walking away, and she turns to her husband and she says, and thank God for the pandemic, it kind of made this fit because I was wearing my mask. She says, do you know who that guy with the mask was? And her husband goes, who, the Lone Ranger?
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Ron and Anian.
You know, that's why I do this radio show. That's one of the reasons, because it's nice to know that people know who you are in that sense, that maybe this show is reaching people and doing what it's supposed to do, and that is help you fix the car.
I wanna be like Superman.
The Car Doctor.
I'm under the hood right now looking at it. Right in front of that's another canister, which I can see the hoses, so that's obviously your vacuum canister.
Right. Is it a black hose with a red stripe?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I bet you don't know what the rules of repair are, and they change every week, although they tend to stay the same most of the time. The rules of repair really are something I live by, and I think a lot of mechanics live by, and I think all mechanics need to live by. You need to go into work each and every week with a preset, preconceived notion of what you're trying to achieve. Yeah, I get it. We're trying to make money. We're trying to make a living. I understand that part. But auto repair is much deeper than that. There's a huge responsibility in auto repair. And we treat it sometimes, and I see it on both sides of the aisle, whether it be the shop or whether it be the vehicle owner, like it's a second-class citizen. Auto repair is a very dramatic operation at times. I'll tell you the story this way. So Sheila dropped off her car yesterday at the shop, and it was time for a 30,000-mile service, and the conversation was centered around do what you need to do. Sheila's a nurse. She needs to get back and forth. The car needs to be reliable. It's a three-year-old Ford Explorer with about 34,000 miles on it. It was time for a 30,000-mile service, which we did. And, you know, I started to go over the estimate of what we were going to just do what you got to do. It's got to be safe. I'm at the hospital all odd hours. I've got to be safe. Okay. So we did. Had the car until 3 o'clock, which I didn't think was a big deal. I explained, you know, I'll try for lunch. I don't know if I'll make lunch. There's a lot here. It's a Friday. There's a lot of little moving pieces in auto repair that tend to go wrong or bumps in the night that happen. And I'll do my best, but you'll obviously have it by the end of the day, and I'll shoot for 3 o'clock so you can, you know, get out in the afternoon. And I did. Did it run good? When, you know, it's amazing what simple little things like clean air filters and doing a carbon clean, you know, getting rid of the carbon deposits and washing out, wiping out the throttle body, just the regular maintenance that you do to a vehicle at specific mileages, you can still see the difference, right? And we were done. And I called her around 3:15. Hey, I'm ready to go. Where are you? And I didn't get an answer. And I texted her and I said, hey, it's ready. You know, you want the car? You know, I didn't get an answer. And about 4 o'clock, she called me back and said, hey, I've been waiting for you. It's, you know, I said, well, gee, I texted you. I called you. What, you know, what happened? And she said, oh, you know, I had my phone down in the living room and I must have missed the phone ringing and the phone vibrating, I guess. I'm not sure. Because sometimes there's no responsibility on people's parts, which is sort of mind-boggling. And when she got in the car, she said, this better not be a $1,000 bill. And I said, it's not. It's $700. How can it be $700? The car ran when I gave it to you. What do you do with that? I went back in my head and I listened to the previous conversation this morning. I'm a nurse. It has to be reliable. Do what you have to do. I can't have it not run. I can't have it break down. What does that mean? To me, that means that's the number one rule of auto repair that I tend to live by. And that is rule number one is you have to fix a car like your family is in it or around it. And I listened for a while. I've learned to listen. I've learned not to react to the emotion I've learned to let people sort of run their course for a couple of minutes, only a couple of minutes. They can't abuse me. They can't abuse anybody. I don't let that happen. But I just sort of let them let off steam. And then I say, so which part did you want me to not do to reduce the reliability and the safety of the vehicle? Well, what do you mean? Well, you know, here's why we did this and here's why we did that. And by the way, do you notice how clean the windshield is? She said, yeah, because the windshield was disgusting. It was like 12 birds dumped on it. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. It was the most disgusting. And we're driving through this. We cleaned the glass. We scraped it with a razor blade. We put fresh wiper blades on it, front and back, good visibility. You know, you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to get to the hospital in a rainstorm. You probably want good wiper blades on the car. It would make sense. And, you know, the bill rolled around and it came out to $700. Tire rotation, oil change, fuel system service, brake flush, you know, a bunch of things, normal maintenance that get done at this age and mileage. And as I said, you know, I always work on a car like my family's in it. I always work on a car like my wife and my three daughters are in it because I happen to love my family. I like my family. But more importantly, just as important, I like yours. I like you and all the pieces. I like you with all your digits. And I'm never quite sure where you're going to be when the problem's going to happen. So I'm trying to cut down the odds. And that's why you do maintenance. And that's why you do repair. And after a while, Sheila softened and she got it. And I think she was just cranky because I had it all day, frankly. And she needed to sort of vent a little bit. And who doesn't in this day and age? And you know what? I'll take it a little bit longer from a medical professional at this moment because of everything they're doing for us. And we appreciate all that they're doing and the pressure they're under. But, you know, rule number one, you got to fix a car like your family is in it or around it or in the car next to it, traveling down the road at 65, 70 miles an hour. Because when does that flat happen? When does that ball joint let go? When do the brakes not work? That's the responsibility of a mechanic. Car number two that sort of triggered this week was the 2014 Sienna, new customer. Unlike Sheila, brand new customer, rolled in the door. I listened to everybody's story. You know, they'd been to the dealer. They weren't happy at the dealer. And I'm not knocking dealers. They just weren't happy with this particular dealer. This repair shop with a Toyota sign over the doorway just didn't make them happy. And every time they went in, it was, you need this, 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 this. And, you know, they were complaining about the laundry list of things the car needs. And, you know, that sort of gets my attention because I wonder, is it the customer legitimately complaining? Or is the dealer trying to overstep and oversell something it doesn't need? And I've seen it both ways. And Emily went on and talked about, you know, it needed a battery. Maybe it needed a battery. How much is a battery? And I listened to the whole story and no complaints. I think Emily was a great customer. And Michael was a great customer. First timers, they sat and listened. Anybody can listen to me talk for 5 minutes. You know, they deserve an award because I think they were a little shocked at the openness because as you hear me here is how I am at the shop. You ask me a question, you better be ready for an answer because it's coming. And we took the car in. It came in off the flatbed. The battery was showing 9.2 volts. I lifted the hood. It looked like the battery had exploded in and around the terminals. All sorts of white residue and acid. And Michael explained, he goes, yeah, I should probably, full disclosure, he said, the terminals were so badly corroded and rotted that I tried cleaning them when it wouldn't start. And, you know, and the thing he missed, which I pointed out was, but wasn't it just in a Toyota? Didn't you just tell me that it had been in a Toyota for service? And he said, yeah, but they never mentioned the battery. And the Toyota battery was 3 years old, which I thought was kind of interesting because I'm seeing some of these manufacturers' batteries not go longer than 2.5, 3 years. They left. Brought the car in. My obligation is to fix that car. My obligation is not to just put a battery in that car. I can't just put a battery in that car because, as Michael said to me, this would be the third battery in 6 years. The car seems to eat batteries for whatever reason. And so as I stick my head in the noose and as I make that promise of rule number one, right? What's rule number one? I'm going to make that car safe like my family could ride in it, like my family's riding next to it going down the road at 65 miles an hour. That's my obligation as a mechanic. And as I said to Michael, I said, I'm going to go through some testing. We checked it for draw. This vehicle had no draw. It dropped to 11 milliamps in 32 minutes. It took 32 minutes for the vehicle to go down to under 50 milliamps, which is the drop point, right? That's the okay, it's safe, there's no draw on this system. That was fine. Charging system was fine. Starter draw was good. I kind of thought it would be. I looked at vehicle grounds at the engine block. I looked at vehicle grounds as listed in the diagram. At chassis, everything looked right. I've baselined the vehicle. Had well over an hour in it, said, you know, first time customer, let me kind of ease them into this 45 minutes of time. Changed the oil, put a battery in the car, upgraded it to a better level of battery, a Gold Series, because it's a better warranty. And I just said, and I explained it to them, I said, for the extra $18, let's take the better battery, because in 3.5 years, if this battery fails again, it'll be free. Spend the $18. It makes sense. They agreed. Changed the oil, synthetic, and the bill came out to $400. And there was a little bit of shock there. And then when I explained it to them again, yeah, you're right. Okay. My obligation is to not just throw a battery in a car. My obligation is to make that car safe and reliable. Rule number one. I also changed the positive battery terminal, which on a Toyota, if you look at it, they're very specific. You can only use a Toyota battery terminal on a Toyota because they're made that way for the cable end. And they're not cheap. They're $22, $24, $26. And we happen to have this $26 part just lying around in inventory because that's what repair shops do, right? We put things on the shelf and hope that we sell it like the Fuller Brush Man. I don't know if they'll be back. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they understood. And that's sort of the conversation about rule number two. Sometimes to make rule number one, you have to spend money. You have to make that vehicle safe and reliable. And rule number two is maybe not everybody's ready for a repair shop to go through and do what they're supposed to do, because they're so busy and stuck at, well, the last repair shop didn't make us happy. They're so stuck at that emotion, they can't see the next one. They can't see what they're really looking for. And that is rule number two. When you walk into a repair shop, know what you're looking for. Get the money out of the way, get the emotion out of the way, get your anger out of the way at the last repair shop that didn't fix it or didn't treat you the way you want it to be treated, and just figure it out. Because auto repair is about the relationship. In the end, it's how you want to be treated. And if you're not happy the way you're being treated, get out. You wouldn't stay in a bad marriage or relationship. You shouldn't stay with a bad repair shop. But you should know what you're looking for before you dive back in with the next person or next shop. A little bit of advice from the Car Doctor. 855-560-9900. Ron and Anian, hey, at your service. I'll be back right after this. Hey. Yes, sir. What?
Where's my award?
Your award for what?
You said anyone who listens to you for 5 minutes should get an award. 2 hours every week, Ron. Where's my award?
Well, actually, it's not 2 hours. It's only 32 minutes an hour because of all the commercials, which is what we have to go to right now. Is that okay?
But it's more than 5 minutes.
Well, I'll think of something. I'll give you something cute next week. I love you.
Okay, that works.
Hang up. Let's pull over and take a pause. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, Tom Ray, executive producer at all. We'll be back right after this.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over and talk to Paul in Maryland, 07F-150. Paul, thank you for being patiently over on the side there waiting for me. How can I help you today?
Hey, thank you, sir. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
A lot of good information.
Thank you.
So I've got a 07 F-150, 250,000 miles.
Wait for it. Just broken in, brother. Keep going. Go ahead. You got it.
Absolutely. The rust is going to catch me before the running gear will go out of it.
There you go. Okay, so it's got 250,000 miles on it. What happened to it?
So about 2 months ago, I had plugs put in it, and it's the 5-4-3 valve, and they replaced an ignition coil because it was missing under load and overdrive.
Right.
That fixed it. It was running great. And then about 2 weeks ago, going into work, I picked up a real bad miss. Check engine light came on, and I got my code reader on it, and it showed a code for a cylinder 6 misfire.
Okay.
And while I was sitting there idling, it started running better. The check engine light went out, and the code went away. But it was still missing under load with the torque converter locked up and everything. And I could look and see in the diagnostic monitor features of my scan tool that it was still showing misfires on cylinder 6.
Okay.
So to test it out, I swapped the coil with number 8 and then ran it for a while. Then that didn't show anything.
It didn't make any. It didn't make any change. You're saying it still misfired on six.
Correct. Yes. All right. It was still showing the count was still building on cylinder six.
Okay.
And then I swapped fuel injectors with cylinder five just because they're easy to get at, and that didn't make any difference either. So I got it into a shop, and they spent some time with it, and it turns out it was ignition coil on six, and they replaced one on three as well. So I'm wondering what I missed and what I can do different in the future, or if you had any insight.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're telling me you swapped six to eight, and it still showed a misfire on six?
Correct, yes, sir.
And that it kind of doesn't make sense. You know, kudos to them. They caught it. But it really doesn't make any sense because it should follow the coil. It should follow the component if the component was bad.
Correct. And that was my assumption as well. So right. I'm wondering if you'd heard of anything like that.
No. And you know what? Sometimes unless you're there, you know, it's sort of like the man on the street news reports. You know, unless you were there and you mm-hmm. saw it, you just wonder what the answer is. You know, did they mistake number six for a different cylinder and erroneously report it? Was it really on eight? Was it? You sort of don't know. Don't beat yourself up. What I would tell mm-hmm. you, what I would tell you to do, all right, is how often do you put that scan tool on the truck?
Not that often,
right? But. Because the number one mistake everybody makes, myself included, and this is, you know, it's a hard lesson to overcome. All right, it's kind of like, you know, you keep looking for your wallet after you found it, is you've got to learn to get in the habit of plugging the scan tool in
mm-hmm.
when you don't have a problem. You got to learn to know what good data is. You know, the reason I know what fuel trims are supposed to be is because I look at good cars. The reason I know where my mass airflow sensor readings are supposed to be based on either wide open throttle or cubic inch displacement or calculated load is because I put them on good cars. I don't wait for a broken car. So, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes looking at a good car, you may learn, you know, well, yeah, this is what it always was. And you've sort of got it easy. You just have to know one truck with 250,000 miles on it.
And, right, yeah.
And, you know, it just might work that way. Perhaps that number six coil was at fault. And the issue was that code wasn't cleared properly or cleared at all. And maybe the computer wasn't properly you know, sometimes what I'm trying to get at is sometimes on a Ford product, if the system doesn't go through a reset, depending upon software level, I've seen cases where the computer won't report correct data information. It'll still continue to report a misfire even when it's not occurring because the computer is sort of in protect the catalytic converter mode, if that makes any sense. So I don't think you did anything wrong, Paul. I think you're on target. I think I just plug in more and see what it looks like when things are good and start to memorize that, and then you'll learn more about what to look for when things are bad. Any other questions, give me a shout. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I just want one last comment, too, on Paul's Ford is what I was trying to explain. Sometimes Fords use a strategy called FMEM, failure mode effects management. Unless things are cleared and reset, it can be misleading in how you obtain data. So always be sure what you're looking at is real. And that leads back to my original comment. You know, sometimes you have to hook up to a known good car so you know what known good is, so you understand what bad looks like. And that's just part of the process, right? That's, no different than what we need to do when we're taking care of people. We need to know what good is so we recognize bad. Let's get over and talk to Paul in Texas, 2000 Ranger 2.4 with a surge problem. Paul, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
I appreciate you taking my call, Ron.
You're very welcome, sir.
I said, I called up last year about this car. You recommended putting an O'Reilly transmission in, and I did. But it worked great for a while. Then it developed a problem that when you started cold in the morning, it would surge up to about 800 to 1,000 RPM, then start to stumble, come back up again, start to stumble, and would repeat it until it got warm. And then would run okay. It runs for about 15 minutes and just dies straight up. Won't restart. I did it this morning, did the same thing. I just tried restarting it now in the noon sun, and it still doesn't want to fire back up even.
Okay, so it doesn't want to start. What's it missing? Spark, fuel, injector pulse? It's got to be missing something.
I'm getting injectors. I'm getting injector pulses. I've checked all four of those. I'm getting spark. I listened to your show, so I got the spark tool and got that done.
Right.
Fuel pressure comes up. It peaks when you turn the key four times, comes up to about 40 psi, and then drops to about 10 after about 30 seconds.
Okay. So it doesn't have enough fuel pressure.
That's what I'm thinking, but...
fuel pressure on that. Yeah, double-check the spec. Fuel pressure on that is a minimum of 55 PSI. And actually, I think Ford rates the spec at 64 plus or minus 8 pounds. And then the other important thing to consider is you're using a gauge, obviously, to check fuel pressure.
Yes.
You know, take a fuel sample. One of the nice things about a fuel pressure gauge is when you dump fuel, right, there's a dump valve on the side of the gauge. Just have a clear container. Those little clear glass Snapple bottles used to work really well. They were just the right size. Plus, if you like Snapple, it worked out. you'd have a Snapple, then check fuel pressure. They did away with the glass ones. Now they're plastic, so they don't hold up, obviously, with gasoline. But if the average fuel pump could fill a Snapple bottle in 20 seconds, it was the right amount of volume on those cars. So you want to look at volume, and then while you've got it in that clear container, you can also take a fuel sample. There's no rule that says, you know, you got to eliminate the obvious, right? What do I always say? I always say that, you know, knowing what's bad is knowing what's good sometimes. And you can just sort of take it off the list. And so there's three things here: pressure, volume, fuel cleanliness. And I think your first problem you're going to find is you've got low fuel pressure. I think that's part of your issue.
Yeah, I drained the tank and re-put new fuel on it.
Right.
So I got the bed off at the moment, so I can be able to do that. But
right. But yeah, let's go look at fuel pressure. So do you have a little bottle?
Yep.
Do you happen to have a little bottle of propane?
Yes.
Say again, Paul.
Yes, I do. Yeah, for the sniffer thing.
Yeah, if you want to have somebody crank it, and you know, put the I'm guessing since you listened to the show, you've made up the little brake line at the end with a little. You sort of peen down the end to feed the engine a metered amount of fuel. Why not have somebody crank it and feed it a little bit of propane? Does the truck start? If the truck starts, man, it's looking for fuel. And it's just that simple. Let's get a good fuel pump in it. But, you know, you can also verify that against your spec.
Okay. Yeah,
right.
That little nozzle, it's at the aircraft shop at the moment. We use it there.
Right. Yeah, no, I get it. Listen, it's no different than fixing airplanes. It's just, you know, you got to go through the list. You know, and it's no horse race. There's no pressure here. People don't understand. They'll walk in, they'll see me at the shop. I'm sitting down having a cup of tea reading a technical diagram. What are you doing? I'm fixing your car. Sometimes you got to do some research. Sometimes you got to sit down and think about it. And, it's not all these answers don't fall out of the sky. It's called research. Never be afraid to admit you're doing it. So, all right. But go back and take a hard look at fuel pressure. I think that's where your problem lies, sir.
Okay, because I think the regulator is in the tank as well.
Yes,
the pump, is that right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
And the fact that fuel pressure drops like that also is a concern, because it should hold residual pressure. But I don't even want to comment on that until we're sure that we have good fuel pressure on this. And then the other thing I'm going to say is, if you have any doubts, like, are you testing it right? Is the gauge questionable? Because the other problem I see that we run into a lot is a lot of places won't check fuel pressure. So what happens? They then hook up the gauge for the first time in 3 years, and it doesn't read right. They put a pump in the car. It still doesn't work. And I'll end up talking to them, and I'll say, well, how do you know the fuel pressure gauge is any good? And it sort of turns the light on in their head. You know, sometimes it's an easy enough thing to do. If you've got a Schrader adapter on another vehicle, just screw the gauge onto something else. Look up the spec for that. Hey, this is supposed to be 42 pounds, and it's reading 42. Good. The gauge is accurate. This car runs right. The gauge is accurate. I hook it up to the broken car. It's supposed to be 64. It reads 44. Guess what? I need a fuel pump. Right?
Yep.
Sometimes you got to verify your tools. So it's one of the reasons why you're hooking up a voltmeter. What's the first thing you were taught about when you hook up a voltmeter, right? You're hooking the negative to the battery terminal, and then you want to go check a wire under the hood. The first thing you always do is you always touch that positive probe to the battery positive. Do you read 12.5 volts? If you don't, you can't go any further. You don't know if the equipment's working. So you're always doing that self-test automatically. So think about that with a fuel pressure gauge, something you may not use that often. All right, kiddo?
Okay. I appreciate it, brother.
You're welcome, sir. You let me know what happens. I'm here for you. You take good care. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this.
Just like a picture, she was laying there, moonlight dancing off her hair. She woke up and took me by the hand. She's gonna love me in my Chevy van, and that's all right with me.
Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's go down over to Asif in Westchester and see what's going on here with this Yukon. Asif, am I saying that right, brother, with the Yukon 5.3? What's going on?
Yeah. Hey. Hi, Ron. How are you?
Good, sir. How can I help?
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
For you for a long time.
Thank you.
It's 5.3. It's got the 4L60E on it.
Okay.
Trans.
Okay.
It's got 215,000 miles. I own it since 100, and it's been very, very, very well taken care of. Oil changes, trans oil, everything is done on time and properly. Recently, probably a couple of months ago, it started. It's a slight, I would call it a clank or basically a harsh shift between 2 to 3 and 3 to 2.
So
on very low speed.
Upshift and downshift between... Upshift and downshift between second and third to two. So it's an upshift downshift issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's only in very low speed, so like 10 miles an hour or so. I took it to the dealer. The dealer said, oh, the noise comes from inside. You know, like we'll have to change the trans. You know, probably didn't really look at much. I took it to the local AMCO here. Very nice guys. You know, like it seems to be that they know what they're doing. They opened the pan. They looked at everything. They said it looked very, very clean. Nothing really to see there. They did say they dry tested the solenoids and they working properly. But really, they didn't even want to charge me for labor. Just, you know, like oil and the seal, because there's really nothing for them to do.
Right.
And I'm stumped. I don't know what to do next.
Okay. So understand the way the transmission shifts in that truck on a modern vehicle is there's an electrical solenoid. When the computer sees proper input, it's looking for various input signals. It says, okay, and it applies ground or it disconnects ground depending upon what it wants it to do in series with the other solenoids. And it redirects hydraulic pressure and makes the trans upshift, downshift, etc. All right, that's basic control. Mm-hmm. It sounds like what the AMCO did, which is correct, they went in and they used the scan tool and they manually applied ground and they tried to make the solenoid shift and make this shift, make that shift, and work themselves back and forth. At 215,000 miles, it's easy to say, yes, it needs a trans. And I get that. All right, and I get your hesitancy, and I get sometimes why shops do that, because sometimes you're diagnosing against yourself, and I understand that too. Cleanliness of the fluid is a good point. You know, it'd be one of the first things I'd look at. Cleanliness of the fluid, correct fluid level, and then, you know, it's either we're dealing with something electrical in the way the computer's controlling it, or we're dealing with an internal issue inside the trans. The only thing a shop can really do is diagnose externally, all right? AMCO sort of did that. They looked at the solenoids and how do the solenoids shift and, you know, is everything else there? The fact that it only happens at select speeds, low speeds, I'd be only curious, does any of the data at low speed look right? Input shaft speed, output shaft speed, what is the computer seeing that makes it want to make those shifts? And then where does line pressure on the trans go when the problem happens? Here's part of the problem, all right? It's 14 years old. It's got 215,000 miles on it. You could spend $200-$300, probably $300 in time trying to pin down to find out that the trans has to come out to be torn down to be rebuilt because it's in the trans. So where do you?
And I don't have problems spending $300. I don't have a problem spending even $2,000.
Right.
Replacing solenoids, all of that. You know, like anything that is less than $4,000 and actually taking the transmission out of the car is better than where I am now. But it seems like the ones that I could find are not willing to do that or not looking to do that.
Well, and I think
I don't know how to find a person.
I think part of the issue, too, is that what I would be mindful of, I'll tell you the story this way. So my 04 Suburban, with when it had 53,000 miles on it, and brother, I changed the diaper on that thing every week of its life. All right, that truck's sitting in the garage right now because it's not going anywhere because it's going to rain out. All right, it's been pampered. All right, at 53,000 miles, you know, you can imagine this, right? My truck, 53,000 miles. You get in the truck, my kids are still amazed. They think there's something wrong with it because it's never dirty. They're like, how do you do this? It's, you know. So at 53,000 miles, just one day, the trans started to shudder. I was in the same scenario. Same thing as you. All right. The trans started to shudder. Fluid was clean. Didn't see a thing. Went through diagnosis. It's internal in the trans. Put a trans in it. Spent, I think the trans was $3,200 just for the trans. And that subsequently led to take half the truck apart and, you know, replace everything that was at the time 14 years old. And I haven't looked back since. And my point becomes failure can occur any time and any mileage regardless. You can't approach this as, and I'm coming to my point, you can't approach this as you don't want anything less than 4,000 is a good thing. What I think you have to do is get it in your head, what does that truck mean to you in terms of dollars? If you had to put $5,000 in that truck, would you do it?
Probably.
Okay. So, and I can convince you to do that in about 30 seconds. Go price a new one, you know, just go price a new vehicle. All right. And then you've got to decide, you know, not knowing how bad this clunk is this clunk worth $5,000 to you? How bad is it? It's been doing it for how long?
A couple of months, you know, like I'll stump you if you have time. I'll stump you with another thing that relates to that.
Well, I'll tell you what, let me pull over and take a pause. And when we come back, okay, we'll play Stump the Car Doctor, but we're only going to have about 2.5 minutes, so keep that in mind. All right? So I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's get right back to Asif in Westchester. Go ahead, Asif. What's your follow-up comment to that? And then I have one more thing to say to you before we go today, real quick.
So, first of all, it's a very slight. I'm just going to let it, you know, like, do. If I can't find anybody to diagnose it, really, I'm not going to replace the trans for it. If it fails or get worse, then
right,
I'll see about it.
And to that point, let me jump in. To that point, the diagnostics are pretty good on that vehicle in terms of if there was a module fault, a wiring issue, a computer fault, it should set a code. It should. Doesn't always work that way, but 90% of the time it should. If that had a voltage issue to the trans control module, it would set a P0568. But, you know, the fact that it does it only at low speed under certain load, unless there's something modifying a sensor input and fooling the PCM or the TCM, I'm thinking that is internal trans, a fatigued spring, a broken spring, something mechanical that's a borderline or has failed but not affecting complete operation yet. It's sort of like a kitchen drawer. You have any of those drawers in your kitchen that close automatically?
No, not really.
You know, you see the new style cabinets, you'll close the cabinet door and then the hinge will automatically close it nice and gentle so it doesn't bang. Sometimes those wear out. You know, the door still works, but the automatic closer doesn't work properly. It's a borderline failure, but it's not enough to make you want to replace it. Go ahead. What's your last comment?
So I was chasing a negative fuel trim on this truck, and I replaced the throttle body. And for the life of me, that thing would not relearn its position. I disconnected battery and all that. And I feel like this whole thing started around that time. Do you think someone can look into that? You know, like, and look at inputs?
Maybe. Yeah, well, real quick, what was your negative? Well, I don't have time. I'll tell you what, Asif, call me back next week. We can talk about it further. I'm sorry, there's just not enough time. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.